welcome once again to another edition of what I call American Exposé. Listeners, I'm Chris Gerner. It's the 8th of August, 2005. The progressive direction for totalitarian one-world government continues, no matter who's in office. And there's the situation that we live with today. Henry Lamb did an analysis, and thanks to Dennis, and Dennis and I are thinking on the same wavelength, people. I had Joe and VM scheduled for the 8th, and should be with us momentarily. I had the Global Neighborhood book in my hands here, and I have that book along with Joan Vion's The United Nations Global Straitjacket. Those two books are complementary to each other in the fact that the exposure of our global neighborhood is in the global straitjacket. Dennis is in somewhat of a mind warp that I'm in, because here he says the summary analysis by Henry Lamb of our global neighborhood, the book I had in my hand, listeners. And Henry Lamb says the Commission on Global Governance has released its recommendations in preparation for a world conference on global governance, scheduled for 1998. Yes, this is old news, listeners, but that's just the way it is. At which official world government treaties are expected to be adopted for implementation by the year 2000. Among these recommendations are specific proposals to expand the authority of the United Nations to provide global taxation, a standing UN army, an economic Security Council, UN authority over global commons, an end to the veto power of permanent state members of the Security Council, a new parliamentary body of civil society representatives, in other words, non-governmental organizations, a new petitions council, a new court of criminal justice. And apparently that was accomplished in July of 1998 in Rome. Binding verdicts of the International Court of Justice. Expanded authority of the Security Council. And once again, listeners, who's the head of the Security Council at the United Nations? Anybody care to give a guess to that? Or research it and find out exactly who it is? These proposals reflect the work of dozens of different agencies and commissions over several years, but are now being advanced by the Commission on Global Governance in its report entitled Our Global Neighborhood, and it's the book that I had in my hand. The ISBN number for that is 0-19-827998-3. We'll give that ISBN number out as we move along. 0-19-827998-3. The commission consists of 28 individuals carefully selected because of their prominence, influence, and their ability to affect the implementation of the recommendations. Non-elected officials implementing global governance on us listeners. A global tax is on the horizon, or the sunset, if you will. The situation is very, very dire, in my opinion, but it emanates from the UN system. Without addressing that, we can't get any farther than first base in recovering our constitutional republic, listeners. Step by step, it's been taken away. Step by step, we have to bring it back and recover it. That's the way I see it. We should have Joan Vion with us momentarily. Listeners, stay with us. This is American Exposé. I'm Chris Gerner. As I see here, listen carefully to this. There has been a surge in the number of participation of non-governmental organizations from both North and South in development-related activities, and also a recognition that sustainable development cannot be achieved solely through government action or market forces. Active partnerships among the main sectors of society, government, business, and organized citizenry, allow the complementary skills of each to be mobilized. And this is what's going on today, listeners, NGO implementation of the situation we are under. Joan, welcome to the broadcast.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's good to be on your show. I apologize for the delay, but that's how life is sometimes.
Well, it's been a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
What would you say to people that think that the United Nations is a useless think tank that never gets anything done?
I would say they are very sadly and badly misinformed. All they have to do is go to the United Nations website, www.un.org, and just start surfing this badly run organization, and you will see an agenda that will blow your mind. As a freelance reporter covering high-level meetings for the last 10.5 years, I can tell you, having read about 6,000 or 7,000 pages of their documents, that everything fits together very neatly as a glove. The goal, the objective, is to change the world from individual nation states, and they always cite the Treaty of Westphalia, into a new globalized world of integrated countries under the auspices of the United Nations, which is basically run and funded by the U.S. with major votes by Britain, and to steal our rights, to change our constitution, and to basically put us in a bondage that our forefathers never intended or would agree to.
And so with that statement that you just made, it should make everyone realize that without elimination of the United Nations system, we have no chance.
Well, it would have to be not only the elimination, well, you said system, and that is the key word. There, for example, Congressman, God bless him, Ron Paul, has a bill to eliminate the United Nations. That's
right.
That's a good first step. But you have to understand that the United States has signed on to every single one of the UN organs, agencies, commissions individually. So we not only have to withdraw from the United Nations, but the World Health, UNICEF, UNESCO, the IMF, the World Bank, and the host of other organizations that are affiliated with the UN that the U.S. has signed on to.
Yeah, and certainly when I use the word UN system, that's their lingo, not mine. They call themselves the UN system. And so with that in place, you wrote the book, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, taking it back to him. What was the significance of that, Joan?
Oh, Chris, you asked such great questions.
I'm sorry.
And this is not to in any way, shape, or form ham, you know, get on my good side.
No.
It's very interesting, Chris, having covered the most recent Group of Eight meeting in Scotland, it was the 31st meeting of the Group of Eight. It was my 8th Group of Eight meeting. It was my 70th global meeting. That Africa was the focus of all of the attention. As such, what they have planned, what they have had planned for us for a long time, over 10, 12, 15 years, is a global tax. Now, what does Prince Charles have to do with that? Very interestingly, the British royal family is key. They are absolutely key to everything that is going on in the world, to the United Nations, and to the agenda that we, the people of the United States, and the other concerned individuals of the world are confronted with. It is true that I had a crush on Prince Charles when I was 12 years old. I admit that. I had no idea who he was. I did not know what a prince was, and I thought he was cute. Well, I had no idea that as an adult I would write a book about Prince Charles. There's a complete blackout about the life of Prince Charles and what he's doing and what he's up to. The mainstream media would have us believe that he's nothing but a polo-playing adulterer, that he was a cruel man to Diana, his first wife. Well, he might be all those things, but there's something else that he is. He is a very, very powerful and brilliant man orchestrating a major global agenda behind the scenes. My book, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, talks about his role in the whole concept and philosophy of sustainable development. Sustainable development was first introduced to the people of the world at the Rio Earth Summit in 1992. That conference, basically, it is so incredible that the Agenda 21 program of action that came out of the 1992 Rio Earth Summit, the whole purpose is to pervert, to invert Genesis 1. In the Bible, if you believe in the Bible, God created the heaven and earth. He created man and woman. Everything was good. And he told man and woman to go and procreate, to subdue the earth. In 1992, the United Nations had the gall to go to the people of the world and say, this no longer works. We're going to make earth dominant over man, which basically makes man equal to an animal or a plant or an amoeba or a flower or a bird. And everything from Agenda 21 flows through a philosophy called sustainable development. I was very shocked and surprised to find out that it was Prince Charles that was working behind the scenes to orchestrate Agenda 21 to find ways in which, as one of his books says, one of his biographies says, that they could get the agenda to, quote, unquote, go down in Rio. And so I ended up writing a book about the role of the British royal family, specifically Prince Charles. Not that Prince Philip is also very powerful, and he works with World Wildlife Federation and a couple of other very aggressive pagan environmental groups. But Prince Charles has been a major mover and shaker behind the scenes, not only changing how the world is ordered, but changing how governments are ordered. And so my book, Prince Charles, the Sustainable Prince, is a very, very key book for people who are interested in learning more about Prince Charles, in reading the book, in reading my second book, The United Nations Global Straitjacket. They can call 301-371-0541, 301-371-0541, and order those books. They can also go to our website, womensgroup.org, womensgroup, womensgroup.org. So Prince Charles is very major, and in fact, Chris, as you know, I was just recently in Scotland at the Group of Eight meeting. You know, a couple of years ago, the British royal family said goodbye to their yacht, Britannia. You know, that yacht is it's more than a yacht. It almost looks a cruise liner. That's basically what it is. It's a cruise liner.
Mm-hmm.
It has over 220 full. It had over 220 full-time sailors that were there at the command of the British sovereign to use the ship. It's now docked in the in Edinburgh, and I had an opportunity to go aboard the Britannia. I would have never paid $18 to do that, but the Britannia is very special because, you see, 14 months before the Rio Earth Summit, Prince Charles invited Maurice Strong, Al Gore, and all of the key players from around the world to a very special private meeting aboard the Royal Yacht Britannia, which was docked off of Rio de Janeiro. And in fact, I have interviewed Maurice Strong a number of times. And Mr. Strong, and people can order that tape if they'd like, the Maurice Strong tape. I have two major interviews. I've interviewed him about five times, but I have two major interviews that they can buy for $10 each. Mr. Strong told me that the prince invited him, well, let me back up. Maurice Strong, back in April of 1991, was in London. He had been attending a World Wildlife Federation meeting hosted by Prince Philip. Prince Charles, he told me, rang him up and asked if he would fly with him on their plane, their private jet, to Rio de Janeiro, where they were going to host the meeting. And for people who are not familiar, Maurice Strong was the Secretary General of the first and the second Earth Summit.
There you have a little bit of a concoction that most of us are unaware of, listeners. And there is the crux of the problem. A global neighborhood by the UN system, Prince Charles, a sustainable prince, the United Nations global straitjacket, complementary to each other in many respects of the picture in place, coming down to a global tax.
Introducing the world's best air.
Women'sGroup.org, listeners, is one of the partner sites to our website, AmericanExpose.com. You can get the audio tape of her latest speech, World Government, the Tragedy and Hope, listeners. The tape will help you understand, listeners, a world without borders, the new global policy for the dollar, and how the stock market has been put back into pre-1929 times. This information is available by calling 301-371-0541. Those of you that do not have the computer ability, 301-371-0541. We sort of interrupted you in the middle of your statement, Joan, but I have to ask you this one question, and I probably presume your time is limited. What would you think, and believe me, I'm not a fan of George Bush. I'm not a fan of what he's done. I'm not a fan of the coalition in Iraq. I'm not a fan of any of this. But what would you think if Al Gore was elected president in 2000? How do you think the situation in our country would be different now than with George Bush?
Well, there's a possibility when we would have had the Kyoto Protocol passed, or try to get passed. So look at our choice. We can go to war, which is an economic stimulator for the people who are in a key position to benefit, which is not you and I, nor our brave soldiers fighting in Iraq. Or we could deindustrialize the United States through climate change. You know? Mm-hmm. Those were our two options. We are in, you know, Chris, we're in pretty sad, dire straits. I don't know if we would have had war. There's a possibility we still would have had war. I don't know. You know, you can't say. But when you look at the fact that we either had Gore or Bush, most Christians chose Bush. And I'll tell you what, I voted for him, and I'm pretty sorry I voted for him. And I didn't vote for him the second time. The bottom line is that we had two Skull and Bones members, Kerry and Bush, running the second time. And, you know, both of them are related to the Queen. Both of them are related to one another. And so what we have seen and what I saw with the change from Clinton to Bush is that there was no philosophical change on the international level. So the bottom line is we don't have any choice. We didn't have any choice. And in at the next election, we won't have any choice.
And basically that's sort of been the scenario of our lifetimes, in my opinion.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's the situation. Now, listeners, if you want to get involved here, no question is too ignorant, so don't feel bashful. The number to call, 800-313-9443. As we move along, you're invited to call in, 800-313-9443. Let's see what Roger in Pennsylvania has to say. Roger, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I try not to fail an opportunity to illustrate my ignorance. Hey, I wanted to ask you, Joan, like, now you have, of course, a wider venue than many other folks we hear. You get on all kind of radio stations, and I think there's one failing. Now, this CAFTA is kind of the minor part, but the FTAA is going to be the...
Wait a minute. CAFTA is just Central America. FTAA is South America. It's just the extension of NAFTA. Right, Joan?
Well, CAFTA was a surprise to me because I covered two FTAA meetings, and the free trade areas is all 33 countries, and basically what they do is they amend, adopt in, whatever, NAFTA and CAFTA. But having NAFTA and CAFTA passed, the bottom line is the FTAA will be a shoo-in. There will be no discussion.
Right.
Yeah, well, this,
end
this,
of story.
Yeah, well, this gets to the heart of my comment slash question, is that we almost deserve to fail just on this front, is that we fail to show that it is totally false under the terms under which it is cast with respect to all this is ostensibly based on the libertarian stream stuff like from von Hayek, earlier Milton Friedman perhaps, and these Austrian school economists. Now, of course, the American Enterprise Institute, et cetera, they're getting these $100 million budgets where they only selectively appropriate from these libertarian stream economists. They only have, like, the Ludwig von Mises Institute types point out that it is false under the premise that it's really trade protection rackets for the well-connected. So if we can, and I think this is where we fail to illustrate that it is a lie under the genuine premises. Now, that doesn't mean we necessarily go with everything Lou Rockwell says, like about somehow, presumably, and I haven't read enough, but he makes a stretch that if we had, say, tariffs just for revenue rather than protectionism per se, that this would somehow lead to war with China, and that to me is kind of a bit of a stretch there. But we can nevertheless show that this ostensible economic theory is false.
What's the question?
I'm sorry.
Formulate the question and ask Joan upon her return. Her time is limited. We need to question Joan Vion. We need to pick her brain, listeners. If you want to question Joan Vion, 800-313-9443. Roger, upon our return, I want to hear your question to Joan Vion. We'll be back to continue the broadcast. TheWomensGroup.org is our website. It's a partner to AmericanExpose.com. Stay with us. The broadcast. This is American Exposé. I'm Chris Gunner with Joan Vion. Roger, do you have a question for Joan?
I'll just leave it at this. Like when the business roundtable pretends they went free market economics, but then when you have that Indonesian currency collapse, which was really a natural market correction, then they insist on getting the IMF bailout, all that U.S. taxpayer dollars. So they don't want that market correction. They're just plain big fat liars to where they really want the corporate fascist type economy, and the only people who have to take it on the chin is the American taxpayer, etc. And could you speak to that and hopefully...
I agree with you. Unfortunately, with the tearing down of all the barriers between the nation states, the economic, the financial, the political, the trade, the legal, the intelligence barriers, which were the last to come down, there is a level playing field. And if you have a lot of money, you have the ability literally to skim off the top. You know, they create the highs and the lows of the market. I mean, I've had people say to me, oh, but that guy back in the 30s that everybody talks about, and his name won't come now that I want to tell you about him, who made a lot of money. Well, he was an insider. He knew when to buy and when to sell. You know, he's quoted with saying, you buy low and you sell high.
Bernard Baruch?
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, he was an insider. He knew exactly, I mean, when they were great, the insiders who could move markets. So now, instead of having every individual country with a lot of rules and regulations that separate them, they now have the whole world to play in. You're absolutely correct. We, the people, are left in a buy-hold position, holding when they, you know, take the profit and run. I mean, and as you know, the NASDAQ is just an example of that. So, you know, yeah, there are people who have the ability, George Soros included, to completely move markets, to change markets.
Roger, I appreciate your thoughts and your question. Thank you. John in New York, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, how you doing? Just another issue is on the little guys. They manipulate the courts to where you have a winning situation on paper, but the judge will rule against you. Also, I was kind of hearing, I haven't listened to the whole program. I'm just kind of coming in, so if I step on myself, I apologize. The Bank of Japan is talking about setting up to compete with the World Bank. Do you think they'll nuke Japan in the essence of that as they killed JFK for trying to outstep them?
No.
I had not heard that. You know,
it was in the paper today.
Well, sometimes I run so fast I don't know what which way
Who's going to nuke Japan?
Well, they're setting their own bank up. How would
that be?
Oh.
You know, it's real interesting. Let me just go back to the Asian currency crises, the Asian crises in 1997, 1998. I did an economic newsletter. I spent at least 50, 60 hours. I mean, it's quite a comprehensive newsletter for people who would like to send for it. It's $10, called Don't Scuttle the Pacific. And when I got done with all my research, what I was able to determine was that the World Trade Organization was phasing in the Financial Services Agreement. The Financial Services Agreement basically says that no country can have any kind of hold on their banking system, the insurance companies, or the stock exchange. The countries that experienced the Asian crises, Japan, Malaysia, Taiwan, Korea, I think I'm missing one. Anyway, those countries, within a very short period of time, doesn't take much, their currencies were all smashed. Now, it's most interesting, when Japan and when these countries finally saw the light, they allowed the international bankers in to buy up their banking and their insurance and the stocks. And now, a year ago or so, is when Japan had their recovery. Surprise, surprise. They gave in. They had an economic recovery.
Right.
So, I don't know. We live in a world in which everything and anything is possible.
Another question, or I guess statement per se to relate to, is as the previous gentleman was saying, boy, it's just an out-and-out lie, and they bring up these out-and-out lies such as 9/11 or whatever else, and you just prove them completely wrong, and they still lie, or we even talk in generalities, well, if 9/11 happened, then it's the Taliban, and we talk in these generalizations that kind of get semi-accepted, and we, instead of nipping everything right in the butt and saying, oh, why are we talking about that? Because that did it, and the fact is this. And so as we stop talking that way, and I understand that, you know, well, you're not playing politics. It's like a language that you're supposed to, if you don't play, they don't let you play. And it's because we've associated to this bad game that has allowed everything to just dwell and become stupider and stupider. And I don't know if there's a solution or not, except other than just tell them the truth. And again, it's like you've got to get in the doors to be able to educate the public what they're trying to do to us or whatever.
Well, how do you okay, how does a king become a king? He subdues everybody else, okay?
Right.
Now, he subdues everybody else not only by his brilliance, supposedly, but he also subdues people by using dirty tactics, okay? Truth goes out the window when you want something, and the only way to get it is to play dirty. We live in a very dirty world. I mean, you know, we can go back to the Garden of Eden. What was the first thing Satan did in the Garden of Eden?
Sure.
He used deceit, deception, and distortion. He basically told Eve, he didn't tell her a lie. He just played with some truth and got her to move away from truth.
Well, I guess my interpretation is that the Lord wants people to have good discernment to pick their way through this turmoil, and the better people will survive, and so that'll build the better soldiers for God in the end, and that's where it's headed for. But boy, why do we have to play this game? You know, it's like, wow, very frustrating.
This is the game of life.
Sure.
This is the game of world history. It's our turn. It's our time. And you're right. We need great discernment. We need great discernment for everything we do. We need to understand who is our friend and who isn't.
Well, we also have to recognize that we have to stand strong as you're doing, and we appreciate you very much. And as in the rest of the crowd that's out there screaming and talking and trying to wake people up. And for instance, I just turned some tapes into some police officers, and when he turned them back, they're like melted in their dash. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I mean, and it wasn't an accident. The other cops wad my paper up and throw it away, and some of them, and then some of them are like, oh, wow, they can't believe they're starting to open up.
Well, listen, aren't they indoctrinated as well, Joan?
Yeah they all Joan? Are. I mean, we are seeing a complete change in the attitude and in the values and in the mores of society. And with the change of those values and attitudes comes the kind of tactics that we are seeing being played on the American people and people everywhere. I mean, you look at the tsunami. We could all talk about the tsunami, but, you know, I had a friend in Australia fax me shortly after it happened pictures, and then he sent me the originals, pictures of his friend who was a tsunami bomber. And Britain and America at the secret Air Force base, it's no longer secret, in the South Seas, Diego Garcia, I think that's what it was. They've been testing bombs that make tsunamis since the 70s.
Actually, Darren Weeks found that there was a tsunami bomb invented in 1944.
Right.
And it's on the website, on our website. The fact that they created a tsunami bomb, and it was out of Australia. So, here, Joan, here's the question. Do you think this tsunami at the end of the year was created?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely it was created. No doubt in my mind was it created. And who's in charge of tsunami relief? Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
The next Secretary General of the UN, maybe.
Yeah, it's real interesting to see how what goes around comes around, right?
I know.
Well, I got one more thing here for you. Now that they said that, I had just yesterday, I've got a farm, and there's like 1,000 acres out perimetering me of woods and whatnot, and it's quite wooded area in the central New York, like the foothills between the Adirondacks and the Catskills. But we've had military helicopters come in where one of them would drop down, and my boys were out playing. They were 14 years old. There's four of them, and they had friends with them. And they spotted the chopper going out, went for it, got close to it, but it came up and over the trees and took off again, and then they found footprints. And they heard the radios going off, and they saw a couple guys flash, and they saw like a camouflage net. And then they got nervous, like, "Well, are we supposed to be here? Well, this is all private land. This isn't public. This is not public property or anything." And they've got the military dropping in. So I guess my question is how soon do you think these things are going to click?
Oh. What a
I don't have a crystal ball.
Okay.
we are hearing things. We've been hearing things. I remember the night that I woke up. In a former old neighborhood, and there was a black helicopter. I don't know. I think it was black. It looked black. A black helicopter, and I could see this light in my backyard. And when I looked through the shade, it was a helicopter flying over all our homes with a beam, a searchlight. And then I looked out front. The bottom line to a long story is that the police were being militarized, and they were being taught how to search and seize. And there was a policeman coming around with a dog and a flashlight flashing in everybody's basement. And almost everybody was sleeping except a neighbor down the street and my husband and I. And they wouldn't tell us anything, and what they did tell us was a lie when I checked it out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we are seeing things, and it is all around the unseen enemy, the unseen enemy. You know, we are all the terrorists until proven innocent. I mean, just like when you take an airplane ride.
Oh, boy.
So, I mean, there's a complete change in society. There's a complete change in things that are happening. People who want to keep their job. I mean, I really don't care for what I'm seeing, but we're seeing it, and we need wisdom for how to deal with it.
We need prayer together, and that's for sure also.
Yeah.
Appreciate your call, John.
Hey, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. No question is too ignorant for Joan. 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443.
Chris.
Yes.
Chris, can we go to the Group of Eight meeting?
Yeah, please, and the global tax.
Yeah, I would like to do that.
Yeah.
Although I'd like to take questions, let me just say that.
I understand.
We talked about a little bit about Prince Charles and sustainable development because it's all over. No matter where you look, no matter where you go, no matter what you read,
yes.
What our kids are being taught, you're seeing sustainable development being implemented at every level and at all levels. Sustainable development is now about 15 years old, and it is coming into its own. Now, with regard to some of the things, I covered the Bank for International Settlements in Basel and the Group of Eight meeting in Scotland. At the Bank for International Settlements, most people know that they manage the monetary system of the world, being the central bank's bank. The Bank for International Settlements is now agreeing with the idea, and I think I mentioned that I interviewed Paul Volcker about a year and a half about what he saw for the future given what he did in 1973 with the global market, currency market. And he told me that in an internationalized world, we needed a global currency. I asked some key people at the Bank for International Settlements if they agreed, and they sort of put me off, you know, ha-ha. But in the 75th annual report, they basically are stating that the global imbalances, which basically they created, of the world will be solved through a global currency. And they mentioned both a global currency and regional currencies. Most people know the free trade areas of the Americas. All the countries in this hemisphere will adopt the dollar, just like we've seen the countries in Europe adopt the euro. And that is going to go around the world where you have regional currencies. And just like you hear now, you have the yen, the dollar, and the euro. And then those currencies will be absorbed into one global currency. Will there be imbalances? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which currency is going to have more value, and what will it mean when the time comes that we have to convert our dollars to, they've talked about the day, DEY for dollar, euro, yen. I'm just reporting that this is what happened. This is where it's at. It's the concept of a international tax has never really made it in any major publication. Now we have it at the highest place, the Bank for International Settlements. I went to the Group of Eight meeting in Scotland. It was very important for a number of reasons. Number one, the reason why I started covering global meetings is because of the idea back 10.5 years ago of a global tax. Well, French President Jacques Chirac recommended a specific international tax. It would be a $1 to $10 tax on airline tickets. This novel idea now goes to the United Nations for the fall meeting in September. And I can pretty much tell you it's a slam dunk. And I'm sure that they already have this kind of tax, that they already have a number of countries that they're practicing it on. Of course, they're going to work out, they're going to test it on a couple key countries. And what will have to happen with a global tax is that it would have to be passed by the Congress or the Parliament of the respective country. So they'll get some pro-global tax friendly government and work out the bugs, and then I think you'll see it go global. You don't have a global currency unless you have world government. That's the whole purpose for global taxation.
Don't we have world government now?
Yes, we do. But my point is that, you know, people, you know, when I started covering these meetings, I had people go, there's no global government, you know, and
right.
They want to call me all kinds of names like right-winger and extremist. But, you know, when you can prove that there is a global tax in the wings, the bottom line is you don't have a tax unless you have a government, and that's the sole purpose for tax.
There you have it. We'll be back to continue with Joan Vion, listeners. The number for Joan Vion's organization, 301-371-0541. 301-371-0541. We'll be back. Broadcast called American Exposé. Joan will be back tomorrow for 1 hour. She'll be with us today for 1 hour. I want her to answer Vicky's question. Tomorrow will be very interesting. I'll have Joan V on the first hour and Darren Weeks the second hour. But today, Vicky in Idaho has a question. I know Vicky's very alert to the situation in place. Vicky, ask your question of Joan, please.
Okay. Yeah. What I'm wondering, or what my impression is that with outsourcing and the problem of illegals and everything else, it kind of seems to me like what they're doing is using social and ecological organizations to implement a redistribution of the wealth, basically.
Is that what
you think too, or what do you think?
Well, a redistribution of wealth. The redistribution, yes, there is a you know, when I look at my skin from last year to this year, I see, I'm not saying I'm wrinkling overnight like, you know, the picture of Dorian Gray, but, you know, I look at how the time capsule of our skin changes as we get older, okay? There's a little bit more pliability than there used to be, you know?
Yeah.
Okay? And there are cycles to everything. There are cycles to everything. You know, if you want to be on top, you've got to run hard to stay on top, okay? Transfer of wealth. When there are so many things happening so quickly and so fast, there is a transfer of wealth for those people who don't have the same kind of information as the insiders. A couple of years ago, I was able to talk, Elaine Cho, Labor Secretary. And I confronted her about the loss of over 1 million jobs in America as they were being transferred to China. And she basically came back and said, the government has a safety net, we're going to retrain these people. Well, excuse me, if the small little town that they lived in lost a major job, I mean, a company, which was the only company in the town sustaining it, I beg your pardon, retrain them for anything you want, but if you don't have the infrastructure for them to go back and find a job, it ain't going to work.
Unless they move to another country.
That's right. So,
well, I'm
so my point is that there is a continual, constant transfer of wealth, and they just have more ways, quicker ways, faster ways, because we live in the internet age. And we live in the, you know, the time of, if you will, airplanes. I mean, it's a lot quicker to transfer wealth today than it was even 20 years ago. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but there are a couple of problems with that. And if you look at what the multinationals are doing, you know, I have no problem with transferring technology and doing all of that, trying to help people raise their standard of living. But what they're doing is that they are transferring our, like, entire economy over there to be producers for our country rather than moving technology over there to produce for their own countries.
I agree with you totally. Now,
good question.
What we have is a world in which they say there is no longer any sovereignty, and we don't owe you anything. And so when the transnationals say they're transnational, they're saying we have no sovereignty to anyone or any country except money.
Let's hold this over for another few minutes into the second hour and continue with Joan and Vicky as we can get to the bottom of this a little further into the next few minutes into the second hour. Stay with us, listeners.